Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
You know, Dan, our next guest is a particular favorite of mine. Ray Faiola is an actor. He's a corporate executive. He's a producer of movie music albums, and he's the leader of the Laurel and Hardy Tent. And if you don't know what a Laurel and Hardy Tent is, we're going to tell you about it in this segment. Well, Ray, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Don. Nice to be with you.
Ray, tell us a little bit about your background and your music album company and its website.
Well, my background, I grew up in Larchmont, New York. I went to school at the University of Miami, where I studied theater. I moved up to New York and worked briefly as an actor, and then decided it was best to eat regularly. So I went to work for the CBS Television Network, where I've been for the last 38 years. And in the meantime, I was able to continue, my acting. That's both within and outside of my marriage. And I also opened up a small business where I restore motion picture musical scores from original soundtrack materials. And that company is called Chelsea Rialto Studios. And next year it'll be 20 years that I've been doing soundtrack restoration. I've always been a film fan, and I'm actually a film collector. I collect 16mm film. I've got a pretty substantial collection. And in addition to being a fan of movies, I've also been a fan of movie musical scores. You know, I was influenced by Max Steiner at a very, very young age. First time I saw King Kong, not only did The Big Ape have an impact on me, but I really locked into the musical score. And so I've always been a fan of picture scores ever since then. And I've always been a collector of film music. And when the digital age came along, I found that I was able to, I was in contact with some folks who had done some new recordings. And I also got in contact with Brigham Young University, where they actually house the Max Steiner collection. And after, you know, some back and forth and demonstrating that I kind of knew what I was doing about, because I had become pretty proficient at doing digital editing, I was hired to preserve digitally the entire Max Steiner collection, which meant that I preserved not only all of the original discs that they had in their raw form, but I also produced complete restored symphonic versions of all of the Max Steiner scores that had been preserved, which is about half of his output. Steiner scored over 300 films during his career, and there are about 170, I think, that in various forms of completeness he was able to hold on to. So when Brigham Young decided in 1997, I believe it was, to release a CD of The Searchers by Max Steiner, I helped out by providing the fellow who did the digital production. I gave him sort of a roadmap of how the score had to be put together. And the album was very successful. And then the next year, they asked me to actually take over the digital production. And that was for The Flame and the Arrow, which was a 1950 Burt Lancaster adventure. Very few people know about the film, except the most ardent fans, but it's a really wonderful William Tell sort of a picture that takes place in Italy. And it has a great Max Steiner musical score. So that was the first one that I was able to produce for commercial purposes. And since then, both with Brigham Young and also exclusively with my soundtrack partner, Craig Spaulding in Virginia, who runs Screen Archives Entertainment. They're primarily a distributor, but they also produced, they co-produced the Steiner series for Brigham Young, and Craig and I co-produced our own series, which was first we did a series of Alfred Newman scores, such as Captain from Castile and Alexander's Ragtime Band and The Razor's Edge and a whole load of them. And then we also did a series of Dmitri Tiomkin scores like High Noon and DOA and Champion and Cyrano de Bergerac. So since 1998, I think I've restored about 120 scores for commercial purposes, and we've released well over 75 or 80 albums. And I wish I could make the announcement today, but unfortunately we're not quite there yet as far as being ready to announce. But we do have a very big Max Steiner announcement coming up. So if your listeners have any interest in classic film music, they should definitely stay tuned to Chelsea Rialto Studios, either at the website or on my Facebook page. I should say on the Chelsea Rialto Studios Facebook page.
Ray, let me ask you, who's your audience? Who buys these various albums?
Well, it's to varying degrees, it's a niche audience. Now, I did a few albums for Rhino Records. I did King Kong, the original King Kong, 1933, and that had a very wide market because not only film music fans were interested in that, and not only Steiner fans, but film music fans in general and film fans themselves. So we had a very wide market for that, and I think the same can be said for The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, which was another great Steiner score, which I did for Rhino Records. Primarily, I would say the market is a niche market. First of all, we're talking movie music. Second, we're talking what we call golden age movie music, stuff that was written, you know, for the 30s, 40s, and going into the 50s. We did do a gorgeous Steiner score from 1965. It was actually his last. It was called Those Callaways, and he did it for Walt Disney. And it's just a beautiful score in full stereo. I mean, really, really nice. But yeah, cool. the market is limited, and unfortunately, we're really trying to catch lightning in a bottle, because in some ways the market is literally dying off. I mean, folks who are interested in a Max Steiner score from 1950, you know, they're getting up there in years, and some of them are, you know, saying hi to Maxie in heaven and sharing a good cigar and a glass of brandy with them.
Dan, do you have a couple of questions?
Probably more than a couple, but let me ask you this first question.
Yes.
Explain to me and to our audience, what is a Laurel and Hardy tent?
What is a Laurel and Hardy tent? Okay. In 1965, Chuck McCann, Orson Bean, Al Kilgore, and a couple of other Laurel and Hardy enthusiasts, they were throwing back more than a few one night, and they said, hey, we ought to have a club. And Laurel and Hardy made a movie in 1933 called Sons of the Desert, where they belonged to a lodge called Sons of the Desert. So they decided to call this club Sons of the Desert. They went to Stan Laurel in Santa Monica. They got his blessing, and they formed this organization. That was in 1965. Well, 52 years later, the group is still going strong. We have well over 300 what we call tents worldwide. And, gosh, I don't know how many tens of thousands of members there are. But I was what we call Grand Cheek of the New York tent for several years when I was still in the city. And then when I moved up to Ellenville, I said, gosh almighty, we have to get a tent franchise here. So we got our franchise and we opened our tent, and we're, you know, going on 9 years here in Ellenville. We've, you know, got a healthy number of members. We have meetings once a month where we get together, enjoy each other's company, have respectable amounts of adult beverages and, you know, crudité and whatnot. And then we repair to the auditorium and enjoy an hour and a half or so of great movie comedy, primarily with Laurel and Hardy, but we also mix it up with, you know, Mr. Fields and Buster Keaton and Harold Lloyd and some of the other comedy greats.
Well, growing up, I was a Laurel and Hardy fan, and when I had some money in my pocket, there was a company called Black Hawk Films.
Oh, yeah.
Where you could buy Laurel and Hardy films in 8mm that you could watch at home. And I collected a number of those.
Well, that's how I started on my film collection. Actually, my first film in my collection, my sister, when I was 5 years old, gave me a Castle Films print of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, which I must say, because everyone always asks me, what's your favorite movie? And I have to say, it's Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. It's not the greatest movie ever made, but it's an almost perfectly made movie, and it's my personal favorite. Anyway, that was my first film. And so I collected the Castle stuff for a few years, and then I got into Black Hawk films. And I actually collected the Black Hawk magnetic sound, 8mm magnetic sound films. So I actually had talking prints of Way Out West and The Music Box and Toad in the Hole and all these others. And I used to, you know, give shows to the kids on the block. We were on a dead-end street. So that's how I kind of, you know, got my entrepreneurial feet wet, as Don might say. And,
is Black Hawk still in business?
No. They closed down about 15 years ago. They sold their entire library to a fellow named David Shepard out in California, who is a film restorationist. And he operated, he sold prints for a few years, but then they, you know, they closed down entirely. He unfortunately passed away last year. But, Black Hawk had a good run of it, and because of the fact that they licensed all of those films, all of those prints, you know, they're still out there, and people can still build a respectable 16mm collection of Laurel and Hardy and Chaplin and, you know, some of the great silent films because, you know, unlike videotape and DVDs, these film prints last forever, and it doesn't matter how the technology changes. You know, every time Hollywood preserves a film digitally, they have to re-preserve it because the technology advances and the format that they preserved it in becomes obsolete. Well, you can always hold a film print up to the light and, you know, have a good look at the image. So, film is forever, as they say.
But I always thought there was a problem with deterioration of the cellulose in the film.
Well,
there is
if there was bad storage at some point. If a film at some point in its life has been exposed to extreme heat for any extended period of time, then it may contract what's called vinegar syndrome. And the acetate breaks up, it becomes sticky, it warps, it shrinks, and it becomes untenable. And so, that is definitely a hazard. And it's the same with nitrate film. If nitrate film isn't stored properly, then it will decompose. It'll turn to dust. Or God forbid, if it's stored in extreme heat, it may just self-combust. A friend of mine destroyed his bathroom because he had some nitrate film in there, and it just blew up on him one day.
Ray and Dan, we have to stop a moment for a word from our sponsor, but we'll be right back.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Small business funding is easier these days thanks to a new breed of lender called FinTech lenders. These internet-based lenders cut the time between applying for funds and getting the funds to just hours instead of months. They also make it easier to repay your loans, but their costs might be a little higher for their service. The next time you need dollars for your small business, try them. You might like the change. I'm Dan Perkins for Recalculating.biz and your small business tip of the day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. It's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
We're back with Ray Fiola, who mixes being an actor, a corporate executive, and producing albums from the music of our favorite golden age movies and beyond. Ray, welcome back to the program. And Dan, please continue.
I want to move on to, since we're about small business, I'd like you to spend a little time talking about, as you were working at, as I understand, you were working at CBS, so you had a paycheck, but you were also trying to build this other business.
Yes.
What were some of the challenges that you experienced in what you have already said is a niche business?
Well, the challenges for me are getting the work, getting the assignments, because all of this music, obviously, is copyrighted. So when someone decides to release a soundtrack album, it has to be licensed. Now, Brigham Young University had a somewhat of a blanket arrangement with Warner Brothers for their Max Steiner material. So they just had to make individual, you know, clearances, but they pretty much knew that when they wanted to release something, they were going to be able to do it. And I knew that when they decided to release an album that I was going to, you know, get the job to do the restoration work. I should spend just a minute on the actual what restoration of a soundtrack is. With the Max Steiner scores, almost all of that music is preserved on acetate discs that were actually recorded on the stage at the same time that the soundtrack was recorded onto optical music film. So they had those discs there so that the composer could listen immediately and, you know, hear the take that they just recorded, because the film had to be developed, obviously. So Steiner was able to keep a great percentage of those playback discs. Now, over the years, those discs got played and played, and some more than others, and they, you know, there's natural deterioration. So what I do is there's a guy in California who would transfer those discs flat to digital tape, and then I would get the digital recording of the flat raw recording, and I would go through each disc recording and take out all the pops and clicks and purify the sound enough so that it sounds better, but not to sacrifice the inherent ambience of the original recording. And then I put it together in what's more or less a symphonic format. We still track all of the scores, but everything is placed in the precise order that it appears in the film, including, if they're available, all of what we call the source cues, which are like if there's a dance band playing or there's a military band or whatever it might be. Because back in those days, all of the source cues were selected with a musical purpose in mind, either for the key that it was written in, or there may have been a dramatic reason that a song was used, such as Time Goes By in Casablanca. The you know, that song is very important to the drama, and Max Steiner, when he wrote the score, he did a phenomenal job of adapting as time goes by into the fabric of his underscoring. And that's a perfect example of how a song becomes intertwined with the dramatic music of a film.
So
then
I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
No,
finish.
No, go, please.
I'm just going to ask, so you got this idea for a business.
Right.
And you start to get access to the copyrighted material.
Correct.
Who were your initial target customers? How did you identify them? And more importantly, for our people, how did you market to them?
Okay, first of all, I was already a target customer myself, being a film music fan. So, film music is primarily sold on the internet, as most music is sold now, although it's still sold in the form of compact discs. There's not a lot of streaming of film scores at this point. So there are websites such as Film Score Monthly where, you know, there are both articles and there are discussion boards and there's, you know, all kinds of news where if anyone's interested in motion picture music, that's the place for them. And then again, my partner, Craig Spaulding, his company is the premier distributor of motion picture soundtracks, and that's Screen Archives Entertainment. So, you know, those two places by themselves give anyone who's interested in film scores full ammunition on how to find out about and how to acquire any score that they're interested in. And that goes what's available from the Golden Age right up to today's motion picture scores.
But I want to go back in time.
Yes, sir.
What you just told us is what's available today.
Right.
As resources. But when you started your business, probably none of those resources were available. How did you identify people? How did you market to them? And the reason why I'm asking the question is that it's not so much that I'm interested in the soundtracks, which I am.
You want to know the building blocks of how I put this together. Gotcha.
I want our audience to understand,
okay,
almost from a generic standpoint, if you've got a highly niche product, how can you build a successful business? What do you have to do?
Okay, here's exactly what happened. Being a collector of soundtracks, an album came out of music that was newly recorded by the Irish Symphony, of music from The Ghost of Frankenstein and House of Frankenstein on one album, not complete and badly conducted, I might say. But the album, the scoring was restored, the orchestrations were restored by a fellow in California, and I wanted to hear more about what this guy did. So I contacted Craig Spaulding, who was the fellow who I was buying a lot of my soundtracks from, and I said, how can I get in touch with this guy? Well, he knew him, and he put me in touch with him, and so I got in touch with this guy, John Morgan. We struck up a friendship. Morgan then introduced me to James Dark, that's D'ARC, and he is a descendant of Joan of Arc, as a matter of fact, at Brigham Young University. And so that's how those introductions and those webs, tentacles, were initially established. When it came time for me to do the actual production for their first commercial album, I established the company name and basically became a one-man corporation, doing the audio production for these works, and then someone else down the line would do the artwork and what we call the mechanical production, and then Craig Spaulding at Screen Archives would do the distribution. So what my primary job as owner-operator of Chelsea Rialto Studios, in addition to being the primary technician who does the restoration work, my primary job is to ferret out available music and available licensing for that music, meaning contacting people at the studios who are in either the legal department or the music licensing department, and finding out, you know, how we can arrange, what are the terms that, you know, we need to come to so that we can license music that they own and produce it for CD. As far as my company having a public face, it's really a public slash private face. I have a website which has all the information on everything we do, including ordering information of all these soundtracks we've produced that are still available, because a number of them have sold out, thank God. But I'm as much a background partner as I am a public face of a company that has public activity. So,
okay.
You know, do you understand what I'm saying? So
yes.
Finding that niche market is, each of us has to be our own Lee Tracy. Now, I don't know if any of your guys out there remember Lee Tracy, but Lee Tracy was always the press agent. He was always the fast-talking publicity hound who came up with these wacky schemes to, you know, get the word out on his client or whatever it may be. And whenever we have to, you know, whenever someone says, how do we get the word out? And I always say, we need Lee Tracy. Well, I try to be Lee Tracy by putting out, you know, colorful press releases, getting the ballyhoo out on as many forums and discussion boards as I can, and just get the chatter going. Because this kind of a business cannot afford high-priced advertising. You're completely dependent on either, you know, website flashboards, you know, or, you know, those boards that change out at the top of pages, whatnot, and getting discussion going. Getting the word out, getting the chatter going is probably the most important thing. Because once people start talking about a product, then everyone else, they want to get in on the action.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, Ray. Your website again for Chelsea Rialto.
It's Chelsea Rialto Studios, and Chelsea is spelled just like the little burg in Manhattan, Chelsea, and Rialto is Rialto. Chelsea came from where I used to live. Rialto came from the Rialto Theater in New York, which is where all the big Universal films used to premiere. So it's ChelseaRialtoStudios.com, and also Chelsea Rialto Studios on Facebook.
We have been talking with Ray Paiola. He's been a fascinating guest, and we really wish him well, and thank him for being with us today.
Well, thanks so much, Don and Dan. I really appreciate speaking with both of you.
Thank you, sir.
Dan, before our next guest, who's standing by, here's a word from our sponsor.
Before you hear this, or this, or even this, before you turn a key, step on the gas, and let it rip, before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
We've been asked recently by a number of people, how can they listen to past shows? And if you go to recalculating.biz, you'll find a link to iHeartRadio, which will allow you to go back and listen to shows that you didn't get a chance to finish or never heard. So we encourage you to go there, recalculating.biz.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. It's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Dan, I'm really looking forward to our next guest. He's part of one of the fastest growing areas of the food industry. Companies offering ready-to-eat at home Gourmet Meals. Dan Weiss is president of Real Eats, and he joins us today. Dan, oh, we've got two Dans. Dan Weiss, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm going to start, Dan Perkins, by saying that I was fortunate enough to try three of Real Eats meals, and they were really gourmet and they were excellent. But I'm going to ask Dan Wise to explain his company and his concepts.
Hey, I'd be happy to. Real Eats is the first ever sous-vide style meal subscription company, and this makes it super simple and very delicious. Hopefully, Don, you enjoyed your meals a lot, but it makes it super delicious and super easy to eat real food, which sounds like it's an easy thing to do, but getting real food these days isn't necessarily easy. We rely on going to restaurants a lot. We don't always know what's in our food, and we take it upon ourselves to have quick fixes all the time when we don't have the time to make meals ourselves. So what we do is we get top chefs to create these amazing recipes, and then we produce those recipes in upstate New York, in the Finger Lakes agricultural region of New York, right by the farms. We vacuum seal them, and then we send them out to our consumers, to our customers and subscribers weekly. And the format, the sous vide format, the format using vacuum sealing, helps to keep the food fresh for 7 days, and it locks in the flavor, the nutrients, and the freshness of real food. When the customer gets that product from us, those meals from us, they can put them in the fridge, they last for 7 days, or they can go right ahead, put them in a pot of boiling water, and they're ready in about 6 minutes. So no microwave is needed, just a pot with boiling water in it, and that's it.
Oh, Dan Wise, what's your website?
The website is realeats.com, realeats.com.
Okay. Dan Perkins, I turn it over to you.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show, Dan. I'm going to perhaps throw you a curveball. Recently, Amazon decided it was going to buy Whole Foods. And not too long after they acquired Whole Foods, they indicated that they were going to enter into the prepared foods market, and I believe they used Blue Apron as the example. With the powerhouse of Amazon behind this exploding idea, and I am a Blue Apron user. I did not know anything about your company until I saw the script last night. And I'll give it a try. But I'm curious as to whether or not is Amazon's entry into this food preparation business positive or negative? What do you think?
I think it's a huge positive. In fact, I think it gives the meal delivery space even bigger validation than it had before. You know, they specifically filed a patent to get into the meal kit space, which would directly compete with the Blue Aprons of the world, like you're suggesting. And I think that is interesting because the entire food business is a $2 trillion business with groceries, food delivery, restaurants, et cetera. And they have tried to be in the grocery business before, and I think the Whole Foods purchase allows them to really be in the grocery business in a very meaningful way. And I think what's interesting about that is out of the $2 trillion business that, you know, food is in the United States, they're choosing to target a $5 billion or so business in the meal kit space specifically. And that, to me, just means that they must see huge growth potential in meal kits. What I like about it is it just gives further validation to the fact that so many people have changed their buying habits to purchase online, and food is certainly no exception. This gets me really excited because as opposed to the meal kits that take about 60 minutes to make with the prep work, the cooking, and then, of course, there's the cleanup after, Real Eats is a six-minute process. So we save about, you know, 54 minutes for the consumer and have about 10% of the effort asked to a consumer as opposed to a meal kit space. So with this additional validation coming from Amazon, you know, I think we're about to enter an era of you know, huge success in delivered meals.
So let me play devil's advocate, if I might, Dan. As I understand, as you described it, you vacuum seal your meal, put it in a pouch, ship it to the customer, and it has about a 7-day shelf life. But when you're ready to use it, you put in a pan of boiling water and put in the package. And that takes care of the hot portion. But where the meal kit also comes in is they also deal with cold in terms of salad, so that a customer gets the entire meal. And yes, they have to spend the time to do all the prep work. And then you have your situation, which is basically, I would guess, maybe it's not the right way to say it, but entree and vegetables. They would still have to do bread and salad if they wanted it. Does that impact your sales that you're basically only doing the entree portion?
No, actually, I'm glad that you brought that up, because we spend so much time focused on talking about our heat and eat meals that I sometimes forget to talk about our open and eat meals, which are simply ready to eat. And we have a lot of salads that, you know, actually some delicious salads on the menu. And we change our menu so regularly. We, in fact, have 150 meals a year that we offer to customers. But very happy you asked the question, because a lot of our product, a lot of those 150 meals are just open and eat. You can simply open up the pouch, put it on the plate, and eat away, or just eat it right out of the bag.
But do you supply salads too as an option?
Yep. Yeah, salads.
So
you
I could order a complete meal
with lettuce.
From you.
You absolutely can, yeah. Sometimes basic salads don't work in our format, so lettuce and so forth doesn't necessarily work very, very well. But we have other very innovative salads that take superfoods and other amazing ingredients, and they're served cold.
Okay. So,
Dan, can I jump in here a moment?
Sure.
You know, we try to test the products before we invite people in, and I was fortunate enough to test Dan's products. And I have to tell you, they sent over a duck, a half a duck, that was at his world. I wouldn't give my wife any of it. It was so good.
I'm glad to hear that. That braised duck leg is fantastic. I've had it myself.
It really is. But I want to ask one question. There's been a lot of talk in the news the past week about Blue Apron and the fact that its IPO is now underwater. But they have a different model than you do. Am I correct?
Yeah, they have a very different model. Well, it's different in some ways. So they're a meal kit business where they send out a recipe with ingredients, and you build the meal by following the recipe. It takes usually somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour to make the recipe, and then you eat it, of course, and do some cleanup after. Ours is more of a prepared food solution. So our food is already cooked. It's made by top chefs. The recipes are absolutely delicious. And then you put that product or the meals, once you get it, into boiling water to reheat them, or like we talked about earlier, you open and eat them. So it's prepared versus a kit. It's a very different model. And yeah, I know there was a big downfall in the stock price after, you know, the Amazon announcement the other day regarding Whole Foods and their patent to get into the meal kit space. I like to think that that's an overreaction completely. You know, Blue Apron, I think, is a very viable business. It has a specific type of offering for a specific type of customer that has time to spend making food for themselves, and it does help them to skip the grocery line. You know, we have a different offering than Blue Apron or some of the other meal kit companies. And as far as that, we cater more to busy people that don't necessarily have the time, but don't want to make any compromises relative to health or taste.
Dan, let's talk about the idea that your package meal, if I was a consumer and I looked at your meal offering, and I went into the local Whole Foods or supermarket or whatever it is, and I looked to buy the ingredients. And then I would take the ingredients home and prepare them to get them to the same state they're in when they come out of your heated pouch. Is there a significant difference in cost?
There is not a significant difference in cost. I would probably challenge anybody to go find a braised duck leg with the accessory vegetables on the side at the grocery store, spend their money on gas, and come back and make that food for less than $15 a meal, which is what we're priced at. And our ingredients are super high quality ingredients as well. So we're sourcing locally. A lot of our ingredients are organic, for instance. And that's a big deal. I mean, you can buy cheap ingredients and probably whip something together for a touch less than that. But if you value your time at more than $2 to $3 an hour, you win.
Yeah. So let's go back to the process again. You're in the upstate New York region. You can't grow tomatoes year-round there, or vegetables, or you can grow chickens or beef or pork, but those things that are seasonal or locally produced, what do you do for supply when those things are no longer in the season in your or where you're physically located?
So that's a great question. Our first choice is to go local every time we possibly can. So most of our recipes are going to be based on what local ingredients are indeed available during the off seasons, or what we would consider, you know, the off seasons. There are a lot of root vegetables, for instance, available all year round. So we have to be very selective about that. But where we just can't, and where there's not enough variety, we're going to have to bring them in from somewhere else that has, you know, really responsible sourcing and responsible ingredients. So that is a challenge. It's always going to be a challenge. We definitely want to prioritize, however, local ingredients.
I want to ask another question. Do I have time, Don?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to give you a personal experience with Blue Apron, which I personally believe is a flaw in their customer service. And that is that if you go on Blue Apron's website to order meal, we ordered, for example, for our son for Christmas, 3 meals. When we ordered the 3 meals, they automatically set him up to start receiving 3 meals. And when I called Blue Apron, when I found out that they were debiting my credit card for additional meals, I said that's not what I'm interested in doing. You're promoting a gift service. When we wanted to purchase the gift certificate, you automatically put him on a subscription and began to send him meals similar to what he had gotten as a gift. Do you do the same thing?
So when you are subscribing to a service that delivers weekly meals, that is what, in fact, it is. It's a subscription, and you're going to get them weekly unless you stop them. What's really important, though, is to be super, super upfront with the consumer and make sure that they understand that that's what they're doing, and then make it incredibly easy for them to skip a week or cancel the subscription at any time.
Right.
And that's what we do. We offer the ability to go into your account and actually pick any week in the future or all weeks in the future that you don't want to receive the weekly subscription for that particular week or given number of weeks. If you're going on vacation, for instance, you don't want to receive a bunch of food at your house that you didn't know was going to show up. So it's got to be easy. And it's got to be very obvious. It's got to be easy to get to in terms of getting onto your account on the website and being able to select which weeks. And if you want to cancel, that has to be easy too. We certainly don't want to hold anyone's feet to the fire. If they like the service and they like the food, then we want them coming back as much as they can. But we also understand that that might not be every single week.
Yeah. We had a situation where we placed, real quick, Don, we placed an order, and they automatically subscribed us. We didn't realize it. And we had gone to our Florida home, and food was being delivered to the front door of the apartment we were renting, and we couldn't stop it. So, anyway, I mean, we need to take a break. We'll continue this conversation
well,
after
we
the break.
Do, before we do, Dan Wise, tell us your website again for our listeners, because I've already had one email.
Oh, great. It's realeats.com, R-E-A-L-E-A-T-S.com.
Okay. We're going to take a brief break to hear from one of our sponsors.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here for Songs and Stories for Soldiers with your veterans tip of the day. Did you know that the suicide rate for women vets is 12 times that of their sisters in civilian life? Did you know that 1 in 4 women vets feel uncomfortable about talking to people about their mental health issues? Did you know almost 600,000 women vets in America are suffering from PTSD? It's time to help. It's time for all of us to encourage our sisters, mothers, and wives to get help by contacting their local VA hospital, clinic, or community-based health care center. So if you know a woman vet that is suffering, go to va.gov and find their nearest VA facility. This has been Dan Perkins of Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us with your veterans tip of the day.
We're back here with Dan Wise. He's a president and CEO of Real Eats, which is a growing area of the food industry. Dan Wise, briefly recount for us how exactly how your product works.
Sure. So each week we deliver 3 meals that are vacuum packed, locking in the freshness, the flavor, and the nutrients of real food. We deliver that to our subscribers. And they are then able to take that product, put it into the refrigerator, it lasts for 7 days, and they can use it anytime they want by simply placing the pouches that are vacuum sealed into boiling water. And within 6 minutes, they have fresh, delicious food made by some of the top chefs around New York. And they are able to do this without any prep or cleanup whatsoever. And then, as we talked about before, we also have some open and eat pouches as well, where you can just open and eat food cold. 3 meals a week, and it gets delivered directly to homes and offices of our subscribers.
Well, Dan Perkins, I'm going to ask one question and turn it back to you. But this niche is supposed to be growing at one of the fastest rates of the food industry. How are you preparing for the future? You're here in New York preparing. Do you plan to have a plant on the West Coast? What's your future plans?
Yeah, we would love to have a plant on the West Coast. Right now, we are very focused on the Northeast and making sure that that's working really well for our customers. You know, as soon as we are able to scale the business and subsequently benefit from better shipping costs and get some kind of economies of scale into the business and making sure the model works, then we could reach a little bit further out than the Northeast. You know, we already have a couple of other destinations in mind. Certainly would like to hit up the West Coast at some point and be able to cater to all the consumers out there as well.
So let me follow that, because one of the things, when I first saw this concept of Blue Apron and the other organizations that started this business, I know it's going to sound strange, but it fits as an example. One of the biggest problems for the American military in the Civil War was the ability to provide foodstuffs to the kitchens that fed the soldiers without it spoiling and deteriorating. And as Don just talked about, what are your plans? It seems to me that as I've looked at some of these companies that have gone through significant growth, and they ask themselves the question, should we go to someplace else? It always seems to be a very difficult, not a decision, but a very difficult thing to implement effectively. I have seen horror stories where when you move beyond your center of influence and try and create a new distribution center, dedication and the involvement of the people in the new center are not the same as the founders who had great oversight over the building of the first center. And so quality control and inventory control seems to be the very big problems for people who are trying to expand from their base of operations. Are you taking that into consideration?
Well, yeah, certainly. We want to make sure that we're able to replicate our process, our expertise, our ability to take recipes that come from some of the best chefs around and produce those recipes for all of our subscribers. But I would say that we're taking the learnings from today, and we are learning every day about how to do things better. And we've got an incredible, incredible team. And we will be able to take that and hopefully replicate that, all of those learnings into another facility. I think it really comes down to the right people in place, and having the right chefs in place that understand exactly how to create a situation where we can guarantee the recipe outcome every single time for our subscribers. And I think, well, I know we have that on board right now. We've got a really great team of people that know exactly what they're doing. But all of the learning we get in the Northeast, I hope, will create an even better situation in another location when we're ready to do that. So,
how many people do you have in your operation right now?
A good question, because we have a ton of full-time people up in the kitchen. We have staff here in New York City as well. And we have a number of consultants. So overall, there's probably 20 to 25 people in the 22 people in the organization or so, 20 to 22.
And how has your business grown?
We are gaining some significant traction.
And how long have you been in business?
8 weeks. The company has been open. We were in research and development for about 2 years, and we opened our doors or opened the website 8 weeks ago.
So how did you, 8 weeks ago, you knew you were coming into a space that was growing. How did you establish, how did you put a stake in the ground to differentiate yourself from Blue Apron or other people? What was your secret to success?
The stake that we put in the ground is sous vide. It really is the vacuum sealing process. It's the magic bullet that separates us from everybody else. And that's because it locks in the flavor, the freshness, the nutrients of real food, and it enables us to deliver real food in a seamless, easy, simple, and quick format that allows the consumer to eat great dishes without any compromise whatsoever. So they have the health benefits, they have the nutrition, they have the taste, because the recipes are being developed by some of the best chefs around, and they can get all of that without spending six kitchens themselves. That's a huge differentiator. Also, microwave necessary. So we don't ask our subscribers. In fact, we tell them not to use a microwave. All you need is a pot of boiling water. There's no other equipment that's necessary whatsoever. And as a result of that, people are gaining the understanding that they can have great meals without spending that time and without making any compromises. I think that's a big help.
So the menu is available on your website?
It sure is.
Okay. And one more time, give us the website.
Sorry, the website is realeats.com, and menu is available. There's a menu that changes each week. In fact, you can see what's coming up in the next, I think, 3 to 4 weeks as well. But you'll see menu available on the homepage as well as on the weekly menu page.
Hey, Dan, I'm going to jump in here and just tell you the three meals that I got were mac and cheese, which were really interesting, the braised duck, and then it had smoked barbecued brisket with all the trimmings. It was really that's why they're on the program. They convinced me of the quality of the work. And we're not being paid to praise them, but I really enjoyed it. As you know, I attend the Fancy Food Show and a few other shows, and we felt that this was a real a winner. And unfortunately, we've reached the end of the road. Dan Wise, tell us your website again, and thank you for being with on the show. And a link to you will be on our site, recalculating.biz, tonight.
Thank you so much. The website, once again, is realeats.com, R-E-A-L-E-A-T-S.com. Thanks, guys. Appreciate having me on.
Thank you.
Now a word from our sponsor.
Life. It's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full. Full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late-night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Have you ever worked really hard to land an order only to find out that you lost it? There are times where we really want an order from a prospective client, and then you find out after all your hard work, the order went to a competitor. We learn wisdom from our failures much more than from our successes. It still hurts to lose the order, but losing an order teaches us a great deal about what kind of business person we really are. So here's your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. When you find out that you lost the order, don't send an email. Send a letter to the head of the business unit that placed the order. Tell that person that you are disappointed that you didn't get the order, but that you'll work even harder to get the next one. Ask him to tell you what you can do so the next time the order's in play, you can win it. This has been Dan Perkins with your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Welcome back to Recalculating, dedicated to American small business.
Well, Dan, what do you think about today's show?
Oh, I thought that they were very interesting. The old-time film is, I could see, is a niche situation. This new food delivery system, I agree. I think it could be a very significant delivery. And I think the biggest challenge for that industry is to educate the consumer that it's actually cheaper and better quality and more time efficient to use these ready-made meals. So I think it's going to be something that's going to grow dramatically. Back to you, sir.
Well, I agree with you. Ray Fiola is one of the more interesting. What he didn't mention is he has over 7,000 reels of movies in his auditorium studio. That's really fascinating. We go up there about once a month and watch an old-time show. But it's time to say goodbye. Thank you for being with us today. From Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins.
Goodbye. This is Dan Perkins. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.